There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. And we are live. The first time I've ever done a broadcast, not the first time I've been to the library here, but the first time I've ever done a broadcast at the Ben May branch of the Mobile Public Library or any of the branches of the public library. My friend Amber Guy Wiseman having us come out tonight or today to talk about what's going on all summer long. The summer reading program, it's not just, you got summer reading program got entertainment for the kids and the adults. Kind of lay out to folks what's going on here.
Well, we are going all throughout the summer till the end of July, which I think the kids start back to school the very next week. So it really is pretty much all summer long. In addition to the special performers we have every week, we're going to have David Stevens, who is a really good puppeteer who was trained at the Sesame Workshop, which is the place to go to be trained to be a puppeteer, and the Excelsior Band, Dr. G, with his magic and balloons, and even a juggler. So we've got so much going on for the kids. But in addition to those special programs that are happening at all of our locations, we have movies, story times, crafts, games, all sorts of things going on for the kids. And something that's relatively new to the library is we also do 3D printing. So,
wait a second. This is one of these things where we can make like make me a new hand like Luke Skywalker was in Return.
We actually had an Eagle Scout a couple of years ago. He was our guinea pig, so to speak. We had just gotten our 3D printers, and he was looking to make a 3D hand for his Eagle Scout project, and it happened, and it was great. So, yeah, you can do that. You can really make almost anything. And there is a small charge for it, but it's 20 cents per gram. So even to make like a full-size lightsaber, which someone it's like $30. So you can't beat that.
Okay, so, and that's available here at the Ben May branch?
It's at the Ben May Library, the West Regional branch, and also the Moore Spring Hill branch.
Very cool. So that now I know where I can find a 3D printer. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a really great way to keep teens and young people engaged in coming to the library. So we also do anime clubs, comic clubs, different programs like that to keep our teenagers at the library rather than, you know, getting in trouble, getting into mischief other places.
Which they will do.
Yes.
They will do. Okay. So somebody's listening to you right now, Amber. They said, this sounds good. Whether it's for the young ones or the teenagers getting involved in things this summer, Best Clearinghouse is the website for the information?
The website really is the best place to go because it's got every location listed. The calendar has everything that you could ever want. Book clubs for grown-ups, story times for little ones. Everything is all right there. And then you can kind of figure out what works best for your location and your timing. So
very good. So, hey, when the kids, because they probably are at this point, I'm bored when you first hear that, no reason to be.
Right. And another thing I will mention is we do keep up with the reading list for all the schools. So we do try to have, you know, we can't have a million copies of every book, but we do try to have several copies.
Good.
But I do recommend that you go ahead and come and get those books now because everyone waits until the last couple of weeks. And then, of course, we run out. So
smart parents listening. Smart parents listening, take advantage of that. Thank you once again for all this you're doing for the city, and thanks for having us out.
You're welcome.
All right, we are here at the Mobile Public Library, Ben May Branch, and we'll talk more about that coming up, but I want to check in with my buddy Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com as I line up everybody here who said that KIV would not win outright. We're all taking our licks today. Cameron, you're up next. Grab your ankles, man.
John, you got to be quieter. You're at the library.
Oh, that's why I'm outside the library. They wouldn't let me inside. Come on. So how did that go for you last night?
You would have a runoff. I thought that it would be close enough between the rest of the field that it would force it. I knew that she would be a tough customer to beat because the business folks like her, the grassroots folks seem to like her as well. And it turns out she was able to clear the deck without having to break much of a sweat during the primary, and I suspect she'll continue the pattern on to winning the election.
Okay, so a couple things there. Like I said several times on Twitter last night as I took my licks on that, you don't need to debate. The old logic of, playing prevent defense still works in politics. But you said something a second ago. You said, well, the business people like her, grassroots like her. Gosh, I don't know who showed up yesterday. I didn't get to get an exit interview with the people leaving the polling place, but I think there are people that aren't even in either of those qualifications. They know that name. The state is not actively on fire that they can tell, so just go with that one. I mean, is that fair? You think that happens?
Yeah, I think it's very fair. I mean, Alabama has really low political expectations. I mean, we are so excited to have a governor who is not ethically compromised. That is aspirational. I still stand by the notion of, I get the political consultancy. I understand, don't show up if you don't have to, if the polls are in your favor. That's a strategy that works. I get that. But I still believe leaders show up. You shouldn't ever be afraid to stand and deliver. And I understand the why and all the political counsel. But the question you've got to ask yourself, do you want politicians run by political consultants? Or do you want politicians who are leaders? And I still think Kay Ivey should have shown up, but obviously it didn't hurt her politically.
So what happens here? So you look at this and say, okay, and it could be Maddox. I want to get into that in a second. But Kay Ivey continues to be governor. We do have a third of the legislative branch get replaced, but the leadership is all still the same. So can we expect after this big 2018 election cycle, we get into session in Montgomery in 2019 of just the same old stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, the same cycle runs in Alabama, the same issues. We're going to talk about education funding. We're going to talk about Medicaid and prisons. Budget is going to be front and center. They're going to say they're going to deal with it early in the session. They're going to actually deal with it late in the session.
Right.
I just want an agenda. I want to see something that says we got a plan before the session starts.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but I'm not going to hold my breath. All right, let's run through a couple other of the elections here and get your take on it, because I want to hear from you when we talk about. First of all, before we go any further, the blue wave. The blue wave folks were all over me last night on Twitter that it is a sign that it's time for Maddox. That Maddox can win this because it's old versus young. Do you buy that argument?
No. To put a fine point on it, I mean, I think Maddox is the best Democratic candidate. I've written as much. I think that was a smart pick by the Democrats. The fact he won outright says Democrats are paying attention, not just kind of mailing it in. I think he was the right pick for them. The problem that he's going to have is Ivy's going to hide from him. There's no way that Ivy is going to stand next to the younger, more dynamic Maddox on a stage or in a interview-type setting and go toe-to-toe with him. She's going to ignore him, and I think that's probably enough for her to win.
Okay, coming back, more with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. We'll talk about runoff time in the Attorney General's race and what this means when the current, quasi-incumbent, Steve Marshall, is in a runoff with the one-time Attorney General of the state of Alabama, Troy King. That and a whole lot more when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from the Mobile Public Library, the Ben May Branch downtown. And I'd love for you to come on by, hang out with us today, and also check out the website and see all the great stuff going on this summer with all the different locations of the Mobile Public Library. Continue our conversation with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. And we're talking about the results from yesterday, the postmortem on the primary. So we're talking about that Maddox is going to obviously try to do what the OTI guys did in the primary and get Governor Ivey to debate, and you're going to say she's going to stay up there in the top of the tower and say, I'm not coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that her consultants, it's apparent that the juxtaposition next to Maddox isn't in her favor, and he's going to have to do everything he can to say she's not showing up, she's not fit to lead, she's hiding. I just don't think it's going to work for him.
You don't think she'd look like a Nixon moment or whatever in a debate, right?
I see her listening to her political consultants, what they tell her to do. She's going to do it. She'll go around, be nice to people, take some photo ops, talk her stump speech, and that's going to be her campaign going forward. Unless something radical changes, I think it's her race to lose.
All right. Help me here. So we're looking at the breakdown for the Republican primary for attorney general. And we knew a runoff. Well, I don't know what I knew, because I thought there were runoffs elsewhere going to happen, too. But this one, just because the last polling out looked like it was almost put down 25% to 30% for the majority of the four candidates. Now we're looking at a runoff here with Troy King and Steve Marshall. But it doesn't look like there was a wholehearted endorsement for either of those. Even though they're the top two vote getters, it's not like people were in love with the idea of voting for them.
No, it was the most spread field of the major races on the ticket. And I think what we're going to see here is a slugfest between Troy King, who has to come out and say Steve Marshall is a Democrat in sheep's clothing, who is a Siegelman appointee and then a Bentley appointee, and never really earned his conservative bona fides. Steve Marshall's going to have to say Troy King had some questionable behaviors and things as attorney general, was not a good attorney general. And there, I see this one a gloves come off, go after each other type race. And it's going to be interesting to see where Alice Martin and Chef Bedsell fall in terms of endorsing either Marshall or King. They may just stay out of it entirely.
Okay, well, you know, I always like to ask that, because I say, okay, when you have the situation and you have multiple candidates in, two are left in the runoff, where do their votes break? But you and I have talked about this in the past. That doesn't necessarily mean they'll break in either way. I mean, there's, yes, some of them could go one way or another, but I mean, if, honest to goodness, maybe there's a super cheerleader out there, but if I'm somebody who voted for Chess Bedsell or Alice Martin and they say they endorse the other person, that doesn't mean I'm going to show up and go vote for them. I might just stay at the house.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And in this case, you know, for example, Alice Martin voters, I don't think are going to be particularly excited about either of those candidates. Bedsell probably the same way, given his attacks on, hey, you've got the Bentley stain on you. I didn't have that. I don't see Bedsell being enthusiastic about Troy King. So this one's anybody's guess. I think I would actually give the edge to Troy King if he effectively makes the case that, you know, Marshall is a Siegelman Bentley type of guy who's not a real Republican. That's a populist message that's going to play really, really well. And I think it's just a matter of, can he get that out enough in time before that runoff?
All right. And so who's going to be runner-up to the governor? Lieutenant governor's race on the Republican side in the primary. We now have a battle royale stemming there as well, and obviously some money to be spent.
Oh, yeah. And I think this one's going to be interesting as well. Will Ainsworth's got to cover some ground, and he has got to brand Kavanaugh as the croniest power company person who has done favors for Alabama Power at the PSC. And frankly, go negative to create ground if he doesn't do that. I think her name ID, plus the fact that I view Kavanaugh as a sort of a younger Kay Ivey, in the sense that people generally like her. She's nice, she's smart, and frankly does good retail politics. So if Ainsworth's going to pull this one out, I think he's going to have to somehow tie her to power bills, which everybody hates.
All right. We'll talk more about this in the 6 weeks to come. And Cameron, one last question as we wrap up here. If you could make the I voted sticker, if you could make that a scratch and sniff sticker, what would it smell like?
Probably some kind of rotten animal, maybe a dead fish. I mean, there were some good choices on the ballot, don't get me wrong, but I think the campaign's so heavily focused on things that weren't actual issues. It's just disheartening.
I think you're right, and I am disheartened. Hopefully something will happen here to give us some clarity before July 17th. People want to find you online, read what you're writing about. Where do they go?
You can find me at dcameronsmith on Twitter at al.com/opinion. And right now, today only, I am south of you calling in Fort Lauderdale, so you can find me down here.
I'll tell everybody in Broward County I said what's up, okay?
I'll do what I can.
Or que pasa. All right, thank you, man. Cameron Smith checking in on Midday Mobile. All right, and I got a text from our buddy Brendan Kirby. Brendan with Life's Ed and Yellowhammer News. And I was going through the state. I was actually doing my junior version of data mining, like my friend Brendan Kirby does all the time, when I was looking at the differences in the Republican primary, in the governor's race, in the lieutenant governor's race, and in the AG's race, and looking at the percentage difference between Baldwin County and Mobile County that you think would vote somewhat the same, a Republican in Mobile County and a Republican in Baldwin County. But that was far from true. And Brendan said, I got an answer for you. So let's let him do that. Brendan Kirby checking in right now. Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing, Chuck?
Doing good. Well, I'm doing better. If you can help me answer the question, why you would have these swings of 18% or 8% or 10% between how Republicans in Baldwin County voted in yesterday's primary and how Mobile County Republicans voted?
Yeah, well, there's obviously we're geographically close together, but temperamentally and outlook-wise, Baldwin County is a lot more like Shelby County.
What do you mean? Half the people in Baldwin County are from Mobile County? I mean, most of them are Mobile County expats, right?
Well, I mean, some. That's actually a myth, too, by the way.
I like to perpetuate myths.
Baldwin County's growth mainly comes from people who are moving into the area, and they pick Baldwin over Mobile when they're looking for a place to live. It's actually not a majority of people who move from Mobile, which is what everyone thinks, but is not actually borne out in the numbers.
Okay, so what is your, before I interrupt you, you said Baldwin County acts like more like Shelby County.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you see it line up, and it's just because the counties are so similar in terms of, demographics, racial demographics, income, education, all these things that are predictors of voting behavior, they line up much differently. This is
but
why
we're not talking about general, right?
When you get, look at the Dean Young Bradley Byrne race.
Okay.
For instance, Dean Young did well in the parts of Baldwin that are like Mobile County, the rural places. Bradley Byrne did really well in the upscale areas of Baldwin County and the upscale areas of Mobile County. So that is where you kind of see that the most. In terms of these specific races, it's not surprising that Rusty Glover would do the best where he's known the best. And where he's known the best is the districts that he's represented in the State House and the State Senate. And I think we tend to assume, well, everyone knows who Rusty Glover is down here. But, that's not really so much the case. If you look at the Senate primary in the Republican Party for the special election, the first round, Tripp Pittman, a state senator from Baldwin County, did noticeably better in his district, but not really so much outside of his district. And that's because state senators just aren't as well known as I think they think they are.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, I can absolutely see what you're talking about. So, I'm looking at the split here. For example, in the lieutenant governor's race, Rusty Glover gets 57.99% of the vote in Mobile County in the Republican primary. Then you look at Baldwin County, 33.82%. All right, I get that. That's the home cooking versus not, nearby home cooking. But some of the other numbers that really left me wondering here, and that would be like, for example, the split on KIV votes, or the split on, the Bill Hightower ratio. Yes, you can use, if you use the same idea and said Bill Hightower is going to do better in Mobile County than Baldwin County, fine. I agree with that. I don't think that's way out. But the difference, the margin is just, it seems to be very big. Versus where Rusty Glover. It surprises me that KIV does so much better in Baldwin County than she does in Mobile County.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's just explained by the fact that, there was no local Baldwin County candidate in that race.
That makes
sense.
There
was in Mobile County. So you take, I haven't done the analysis.
So it's a turnout thing as much as anything.
Take the high power numbers out of Mobile and redistribute all the rest of the votes.
you know, where how Ivy fares vis-a-vis, you know, Baldwin County. I suspect that it would make it a little bit closer. I mean, that lieutenant governor's race, you know, Rusty Glover was under-resourced. I saw one Will Ainsworth ad after another on TV just over and over and over again, and then same for Twinkle Kavanaugh, who has, you know, been running for office, you know, I think all of her adult life or something like that, said they had better name recognition. And, you know, most people just, they don't pay that close attention, but if you see their ads over and over again, it sticks. And Rusty Glover, just, he was not on TV to the same extent. So people
who, all right, we've got to jump, Brendan, up against the bottom of the hour break, but we will talk again very soon about this and a whole lot more. Brendan Kirby, big thank you to him, and we're coming right back. We are live from the Mobile Public Library, and we're going to talk Skeeters coming up in just a second. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, Dalton Norwood here with Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Looks like we lost connection with Sean. We'll try to get him back in just a minute. But first, I want to talk to Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. Angelo, how's it going on this Wednesday?
Man, a bright, sunny day for a change. How are you doing today, Dalton?
I'm doing great. And primary's finally over, so able to breathe just a little bit here at the radio station. But Sean right now out at the Ben May Library, Mobile Public Library. But I want to hear what's going on at Mobile Bay Coins with you guys. What's going on this week?
Well, tell you what, we've had a couple cool things lately, as we were talking about with Sean last time he was here. Alabama now does not have sales tax for gold and silver bullion, United States coins, and United States currency. So all the folks out there that are listening that have thought about collecting but, you know, didn't want to pay that 10% sales tax, they don't have to worry about that anymore. They can come by Mobile Bay Coins, check out all the cool bullion items, and that 10% sales tax is gone for the next 5 years.
So you've been kind of, I guess, playing teacher a little bit over the last week or so. You have to let everybody know that comes in, and I'm sure you have some regulars that are learning about this. It's a big deal for you guys.
Well, they have been really excited, and one thing that's especially exciting is a lot of folks were traveling over to Florida. But in Florida, the law is you have to buy a minimum of $500. Well, the Alabama law is even better. There's no minimum. You can buy 1 ounce of silver, spend $20, and you still don't have to worry about sales tax. And you can also buy U.S. coins and currency.
And I know we have a holiday coming up. It's not talked about as much as Mother's Day, but Father's Day coming up, and you guys have some great gifts there for some fathers.
We certainly do. Everything from those really cool open-o knives that Sean likes so much to all sorts of guy jewelry, you know, keychains, money clips, things like that. And then if you just want to get them a cool piece of silver, that's available too.
All right. And how does everybody contact you if somebody wants to come by and get a gift or check out those new prices and get it while it's a little bit lower than it has been in the past? How do they get in touch at Mobile Bay Coins?
Best thing to do is just shoot on by. We're over here in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can call us at 725-1590 or go on to Facebook, look up Mobile Bay Coins, and start following us there.
All right. We really appreciate it, Angelo, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you later, buddy.
All right. That's Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. And while we try to get back in contact with Sean, like I mentioned, he's out at the Mobile Public Library, the Ben May branch. Lots going on there. They're kicking off their summer reading program. So we'll get in touch with Sean right here, and we'll be right back with more Midday Mobile right after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. And there we go. We'll get the right headset. Hey, pick a headset, any headset, and do the show. All right, Midday Mobile, live from the Mobile Public Library. And, hey, we make it through. Listen, we just challenges, just speed bumps to get over. And I think we're here. We're good. Also, I want to go ahead and say a big thank you to Angelo and the crew at Mobile Bay Coins, and we'll be out to see them again very, very soon. I said we're going to talk Skeeters, and maybe that's what happened. Maybe just the discussion of Skeeters and we had a Skeeter attack on the generator or something. But Jerry, how do I say your last name?
Foltz, F-O-L-S-E.
Foltz. And we were talking here with Mark before we went on. 40 years in the skeeter chasing business?
Yes, sir.
So, listen, now, you're the man. So you're the man that knows this. And I want to talk about what the latest information out, of course, about Zika virus and the mosquitoes that have the better chance of transmitting the Zika virus. But you were telling me something earlier, the number of species. I guess people just say, those are all mosquitoes. All right. Those things that bite me in the backyard, those are mosquitoes. You said in Mobile County we have how many species?
We've identified over 50 different species.
50?
Yes.
50.
Mm-hmm.
Do they look different enough to somebody like you with your experience? Can you see one go flying by you and go, oh, that's a so-and-so, you know?
Possibly earlier in my career when my eyesight wasn't quite so bad, but
right.
you would have to look at, differentiate them under a microscope or a hand lens at least.
Okay, so, but the press release coming out, news coming out is this species, one of these 50 that's been identified.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, okay, see, I'm going to try. You're working with me here. Aedes aegypti.
Very good. Perfect.
I got it. All right. The Aedes aegypti mosquito. Why is that of importance here when we're talking about Zika?
Well, they've shown where it has a greater ability to transmit Zika than some of the other mosquitoes, such as the Asian tiger mosquito and all. Now, this really isn't new. I mean, you know, the Aedes aegypti was here for hundreds of years.
Okay.
The cemetery right next to us was established for yellow fever victims.
Oh,
back
this is the yellow fever 18, mosquito.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is. So, yeah, but, you know, so it... The Asian tiger mosquito was introduced in Port of Houston through tires. It displaced this mosquito. We didn't see it here for 25, 26 years. Then Auburn did a study here and has found it. They started this study in 2016. They found it a few places, 2016, 2017. It's not real widespread as of yet. That's cause for concern that it's here, but not cause for widespread panic.
Okay, and so with that, though, we kind of got a discussion there during the news break about the reason why this Aedes aegypti has a higher chance of you getting Zika or some other disease like yellow fever, like you're talking about in the past history of our city, because of how it eats on you or what?
Yeah, well, it's the way, I mean, it feeds during the day mostly.
Okay.
It's known for feeding on multiple sources. If it gets interrupted, it will just go from source to source to source. So it's, you know, as far as the transmission, yeah, it's shown an ability to transmit Zika a little better than the albopictus.
Okay, and we were talking about how this kind of will work. So there, you have a population of human beings here,
mm-hmm.
and here the mosquitoes are all flying around. Mosquito goes and bites somebody that has Zika,
right.
And then goes to the other person and bites him, and that's how it transfers. You told me there doesn't need to be a third party critter.
No, there doesn't need to be a reservoir, a bird, or anything like that. Now, in the jungle, it circulated from, in Uganda, it circulated from mosquitoes to monkeys and back to monkeys, and then the mosquito actually bit a human and brought it, kind of bridged the gap between the humans and the mosquitoes.
Okay, so once again, this is, and I don't want to, we're not here to shock people. This is not about, hey, we got a big Zika problem. It's the fact that the mosquito has been identified.
Yes, it's the fact that the mosquito, and we don't really know whether it was just a remnant population that went undetected. We are a seaport. We have trains. We have an interstate. We have a cruise ship. There's a number of ways that it could have been reintroduced here.
Right. So we're really, the reintroduction, when I want to make sure people listen so we don't, you know, panic people for no reason.
Right.
This is, we're talking about the mosquito, not the virus at this point.
That's exactly right. I mean, so far with Zika, we've only had two travel-related cases, and that's been it.
All right. And how close have we had? I know there was in Florida last year, right? There was
in Miami, South Florida. In Miami, there was local transmission, and in South Texas near Brownsville, there was local transmission.
Okay, so those are the closest places that,
yes.
that there was.
Yes.
In other words, it bouncing around inside that area versus somebody travels to a Zika zone and comes back home.
Yes.
Now we've got to go through the questions here on, all right, mosquitoes. So obviously, it's foolish to say it's mosquito season. It's always kind of mosquito season, right, Jerry?
Yeah, I mean,
that's
right. Well, the winters are so mild, and yes.
But even, you know, even this year, I think about that. We had some really good cold weather there for a while in December, and the mosquitoes seemed to do just okay when they came back out. I mean, heck, you think you go to places up in the Canadian prairies where it gets cold, mosquitoes, once everything thaws out, mosquitoes are back out and doing it.
They're point well taken. I mean, you know, Minnesota, Alaska, wherever. They have them too.
So we're always kind of down here. As soon as it's warm enough or the wind's not blowing too much, we have a mosquito day. What can people do without, I mean, obviously the basic things. We understand, you know, don't go out in a place with a bunch of stagnant water and stand there, you'll get bitten. But are there some other things from 40 years of doing this in this vectoring that you can say, here's like the pro tip, here's something to do?
Not really. Personal protection's the big thing. I mean, if they have to
conceal
go outside.
And carry?
Not quite that.
Okay.
But in a can,
mosquito.
Yes. But, you know, any mosquito repellent that has DEET in it,
right.
You know, you use those according to the label because some of those are age specific.
Right.
And, yeah, just limit their outdoor activity during peak activity periods for mosquitoes. You know, turn over the standing water. It's really, the message has not really changed in all the years. I mean, it's still the same basics.
Right.
Yes.
So, obviously, we hadn't learned our lesson.
No, the only thing I can tell you is with the advent of Zika, people seem to be a little more receptive to the message.
Gotcha. And, it's got our attention.
And I don't know if it had to do with the fact that it was dealing with babies or what, but you know, and tugging at the heartstrings. But they seem to be more receptive about checking their own properties and just making sure that they can do everything they can.
All right. Coming right back, we'll get more Skeeter talk here. And if you got a question, too, you can hop on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along live at the Mobile Public Library, and it is the kickoff of the summer reading series. This is not reading, this is spelling, but a reminder here, the Manis Boys got another great event happening at Cottage Hill Package happening tomorrow night with Red Clay Brewing Company out of Opelika. They're going to be pouring their Red Clay Brews, the Halftime Hefeweizen, the 53 Kolsch Style, Southern Renegade Southern Style ESB, the Mackenzie Scotch Style Ale. And in addition to tasting some beer from Red Clay, another adult spelling bee. Yes, your chance to show off your spelling skills. The Adult Spelling Bee is back tomorrow night at Cottage Hill Package. Enjoy a drink and some excellent Red Clay Brew. And then, try your hand at spelling while you're there. Also, make sure while you're there, check out all the gift items for maybe Dan for Father's Day coming up. Great craft beer, cigars, spirits, fine wines, all at the corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, online at cottagehillpackage.com, and find them on Facebook. All right, continue our conversation, our skeeter conversation, with Jerry Foles from the Mobile County Health Department, who has been chasing skeeters for four decades. This man is a font of information, and I've been trying to suck some out of him here during the break here and find out more. We talked about the story, and this is good to make sure we're clear. It is a species of mosquito that seems to be one that can transmit Zika. We're not saying that there's Zika here. It's, hey, this mosquito's been found again.
Right.
First time since 92 or so?
91, 92.
All right. So when you do control, like we talked about things we can do, and, you know, use your repellent, don't go out at the peak times of their activity, long-sleeve shirt, long-sleeve pants. But y'all are working to keep their numbers down as well. And talk about how you do that with the city.
Well, what we do is, I mean, we, you know, our county's pretty big. It's 1,200 square miles. We have people that go out in the daytime and try to treat standing water. We have over 2,000 sites within the county that we inspect and treat regularly. We respond to complaints from the public. We find that probably 70% of the people that make mosquito complaints don't even know they're raising them in their own yard.
Really, still people hadn't figured out the old, like, I walk around and I'm always turning stuff over in my yard or shaking it out or something, you know, just making sure. But people were like, I don't know, I didn't know that standing water is where they did their heeing and a sheeing or what?
Well no, and it's after 40 years, we're still trying to get I'm still trying to get the message out to them. And let's say that somebody has something in their yard, and they say, boy, the mosquitoes are horrible. Let me call the health department and let them spray.
Right.
All right, well, the health department can come by, spray. Hopefully we'll kill most of what's out there. tomorrow some more will hatch out, the next day, the next day, right, until the source is eliminated. So their perception is, well, the health department must be spraying water because I still got mosquitoes.
Right. But it's not a pre-emergent. It's only going to get the mosquitoes that have hatched.
Right. It's a contact insecticide. It's not like the mosquito Joe or anything that comes out and sprays your backyard. Their purpose is to leave a residue on the vegetation, and then the mosquitoes land on it and they get a lethal dose.
Okay. Now, you also do it not just from the ground.
Right.
You take to the air.
Right. We have a Cessna 182 that we do spray in the primarily in the coastal areas to combat the large hatch-offs of salt marsh mosquitoes.
Okay. Great question. So I want to talk, because I mentioned this morning when I said you were coming on, I said there's mosquitoes like I have at the house, and then when we go down to my in-law's place at Dolphin Island, is that the salt marsh mosquitoes?
That's the salt marsh mosquitoes,
they are like,
yes.
They're not scared of anything. Those jokers, they'll fly in a wind that would keep other mosquitoes down. They bite hard enough you feel it.
Right.
That is a different species.
They're more aggressive biters. They do bite readily during the daytime.
Oh, yeah, they don't care.
They really don't care. And they also hatch out in large numbers. There's not really a whole lot of survival mechanism. In some of the species, they stagger the hatching.
Mm-hmm.
But in these, pretty much, they hatch out all at once.
And so, when does that start with them hatching out all at once?
It just depends
on temperature.
It depends on the temperature.
Is it lined up with the mosquitoes like we're going to see here in town? I mean, are they as soon as it gets warm, or is it later in the season or earlier in the season?
Usually, we don't see the salt marsh mosquitoes begin quite as early as some of the ones we'll see in the spring and early summer. But when they show up, You know it.
Yeah, guaranteed. I know it. Like you said, they are daytime. Okay, fine. We'll come bite you.
Well,
nighttime we'll bite you.
And there's other habitat that breed them other than the salt marsh per se.
Okay.
I mean, you won't find. You know, species of mosquitoes are a breeding source specific. You won't find salt marsh mosquitoes breeding in a container that the Aedes aegypti would, but you like some over here on the causeway, we have some of these dredge spoil disposal sites with the huge dikes.
Yes.
The Corps uses those to dewater the sediment they get from the harbor and the channels.
Right.
All right. Well, the salinity's already in there. So as it dewaters, it cracks. All up and down the walls of those cracks, the mosquitoes lay the eggs. When the rainfall hits it, they hatch millions and millions of them.
Okay,
all
so
at once.
You're spraying from the roads. You're asking us to do our part, spraying from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I love it. You know, I talk about it every year. Y'all got chickens helping us out here too.
We certainly do. We have sentinel chickens that we raise from little bitties up until they get to a usable size. We place them in 13 coops throughout the county. And we bleed these chickens once a week, and we send the blood off and test for different mosquito-borne viruses.
So the mosquito bites a chicken, the chicken develops something in its blood that lets you know.
Develops antibodies, right.
That is pretty neat. I mean, in the world of all the technology that's going on out there, the best way to do this are some chickens.
Well, that's one of the better ways that we've found to do it. Yes.
I like it a lot. All right. Somebody wants to get more information, and I think they probably got a little bit of a lesson here. Just because y'all sprayed yesterday and they haven't tumped over the water in their backyard and they got mosquitoes again, it's probably on them. But if they want to get in touch with you, talk about a bad mosquito problem, how do they do it?
They can call our office at 690-8124. They can go on the website at mchd.org, go to the services tab, and scroll down to vector services. They also can contact us on, by email.
All right. Very good. Well, this is an education. We're probably going to have to talk again here as we go through the summer and watch for other things like Tripoli and the West Nile and those things, right?
I'd be happy to.
All right, Jerry. Thank you so much. And, hey, thank you, everybody here at the Mobile Public Library, for having us out. Summer reading series kicking off, but that's not it. You have Beyond for the kids. You got events for the teenagers. And, hey, us grown-ups that like music, Tuesday nights at Bernheim Hall, got a concert series going on as well. More information on their website for the Mobile Public Library. Big thank you to Dalton back in the studio and everybody who came by today. We'll do it again tomorrow morning, Mobile Mornings, right here on FM Talk 106.5. The Paul Feinbaum Show is next.